Leadership is a series of expectations as well as a set of skills. And so it's really important that leaders be willing to spend some time thinking about their expectations of leaders and what they have a right to incorporate into their role in relationship to those they lead and also in relationship to the organization. So it's important that we spend some time looking at leadership expectations. Recently, Larry Bossidy published an article in the Harvard Business Review in April 2007 that discussed in depth leadership expectations and the relationship between leadership expectations and the roles of those related to the leader, as well as the role of the leader itself. While there are no specific set of expectations that are complete or exhaustive, there are at least some basic expectations that the leader has a right to incorporate into their role that should be an expectation, if you will, between the role of the leader and those the individual leads. These behaviors are powerful individually, but when taken together really define the performance of the leader and suggest areas of growth for leaders that are important in the expression and development of their role. First, expectation. Is the expectation to be involved, to be engaged? Certainly, good leaders are aware of the need to be good in delegation. More importantly, however, they know that whenever the situation calls for their involvement, that it's necessary that they take a lead in providing it. Now, whether that involvement is redirecting resources or making decisions about critical clinical processes or elements or priorities, the leader has a right to expect that all of those with whom he or she relates are involved and committed to the processes of decision-making. The leader should expect that individuals who report to them and who share responsibility for collective and teamwork take responsibility for blame or for success, for those things that go wrong and those things that are successful. Also, the leader makes sure that credit is positively distributed and appropriately allocated to the individuals to which it is directed. It's important that while there are no hard and fast rules about involvement, that good managers, good leaders, generally step in under three type of circumstances with regard to involvement. When somebody is falling behind in her or his commitments, when important personal matters arise, and particularly if there's conflict. Bossidy suggests that in a crisis and in conflict, the leader must demonstrate their ability to engage and to become involved with others as they work through the conflict issues and try to resolve them. This notion of involvement is really an important one when one considers the ability for leaders to engage others and for others to engage the leader and expect the leader to perform in a way that helps move decision-making, take action, evaluate outcomes, and make necessary changes. This level of engagement and involvement is really critical to the success of the leader and the performance of individuals, as well as the overall success of the organization. Next, the leader really has a right to expect that those that he or she leads will generate ideas. You know, a very common frustration, Bossidy suggests, in most American organizations is really the lack of creativity and the lack of ideas. An innovative person who is both creative and change-engaging is certainly someone that could be treasured by the organization and plauded by his or her peers. These kinds of individuals are generally either quiet or in the periphery or unheard from because most of the time people either think they're off the wall or don't have anything meaningful to contribute to current and contemporary reality. Sometimes these people are called unrealistic and in some way not necessarily reflective or engaging people at where they are instead of recognizing that the value of these people is really pushing people beyond where they are and moving them in new directions and new ways of thinking. And so it's really important that the leader be able to recognize these individuals, understand their presence, and to engage them in a way that incorporates their creativity, innovation, and sometimes quirkiness into the idea process. Also, the leader must make it legitimate for not only these kinds of people, but for everyone to be involved in creative and innovative idea generation. without doing this, the organization doesn't confront change appropriately and make the necessary changes to respond to changing external and internal conditions and circumstances in a way that is unique and innovative and creative and moves the organization to be able to engage newer realities and newer constructs for responding to those realities. It is clearly the expectation of leaders that they come up with good ideas. But, you know, sometimes leaders are reluctant to come up with good ideas alone. And the value of an idea is that idea that's bounced around the collective wisdom and shared generally until it is kind of worked out and, in some detailed sort of way, discussed and sorted through so that whatever it produces and wherever it leads can benefit from the result of some collective discernment and group wisdom. The other value of generating ideas is the equity that it creates in the organization and the sense among participants in the organization that there is equal value and recognition for the contribution and the uniqueness of every individual, and that the validation of that comes through the application of collective ideas and taking individual ideas and throwing them into the mix so that they become a part of the dialogue and of the value that's sorted through as new directions and changes, as well as responsive to those changes and directions, are refined and more clearly defined throughout the organization. Next, the leader has a right to expect that all those on the team with whom the leader relates are willing to collaborate. It's really surprising, Bossidy suggests, how many people still resist collaboration or sharing credit, even though now we know much more that we can achieve when we bring everyone to the table that relates to the achievement. You know, one of the things that the leader does is set the table appropriately for the kinds of decisions that are made there. The table should represent the diversity of thinking and dialogue necessary to deal with the breadth of issues directed towards problem solving or solution seeking. And the expectation of the leader is that all will be willing to participate at that table when the call for their involvement is placed out there. Often, silence or reticence or being overwhelmed with the work of the day keeps individuals from recognizing that a fundamental part of their work is not just doing the functions and activities, but also a willingness to engage in idea generation, collaborating with others, problem-solving, solution-seeking, creating and new modeling, as a part of improving the work and changing it and raising the standard of work in a way that can adjust the work meaningfully and create new models or new ways of doing the work that are better than those that are in current existence. You know, when an individual fails to undertake this kind of activity, they are cursed then to remain with work that is unchanging and perhaps non-creative and non-responsive and sometimes might not even be relevant. This need for engagement and collaboration and working with others is a fundamental obligation of every workplace and every set of circumstances, and should be looked at as the requisite for work performance. Therefore, the leader has a right to expect, especially in the professional workplace, that this notion of collaboration and sharing and collective problem solving is a fundamental element of the work and of the individual's ability and willingness to do it. Next, Bossidy suggests that leaders need to expect that those in the organization with whom they have a relationship will also participate in leading and guiding specific initiatives. Bossidy says that there is no way of knowing how a challenging new project will ultimately turn out, so often people are reluctant to be associated with anything that's untested or undeveloped, particularly if it might cross functional or unit boundaries or might challenge levels of competence or self-understanding. It is important to recognize that in every endeavor and enterprise there is a need to address changing conditions and circumstances, programs, plans, and processes, and sometimes that needs to be done in a formal way. The leader should not always be the person expected to lead and to guide and facilitate these processes. In a professional organization, a part of the profession and the professional's work is to be willing to participate in those things which improve the work of the profession, change conditions and circumstances, upgrade patient activities, assure better patient outcomes. All of these things are necessary in order for this to happen. Increasingly, the activities related to these functions are interdisciplinary and do cross boundaries, professional boundaries, disciplinary boundaries, organizational boundaries. And recognizing again how important it is to be aware of the leader's role in operating at the intersections, these boundaries, while they provide certainly disciplinary context for dealing with different groups of people, are also the locations, if you will, where much of the work gets done that will move the disciplines in a common direction and serve as a frame, if you will, or a touch point for problem solving and for making change. So these leaders have to recognize that providing this kind of facilitation and encouragement and development of their role in relationship to other leaders and other disciplines and other players is really an important part of the leadership process and must be incorporated willingly into the dynamic of the expression of leadership. And it's the implication of Bossidy's suggestion is for the clinical leader to recognize that in many cases, problem solving and attempting to make change within the healthcare environment will involve nurses providing a specific kind of leadership for disciplines in pulling them together, getting them in the same room, setting the table, and facilitating the dialogue necessary to move individuals and organizations in a common direction. This clinical leadership capacity is a fundamental expectation of the clinical leader and should be incorporated into the process. As we mentioned earlier, not everyone is excited about participating in things that provide new direction in solution seeking and problem solving when there is a stake they have in either the status quo or the direction of problem solving. And so it's important to recognize that people are generally involved in these processes somewhat reluctantly, and that the leader is really addressing and guiding people through processes that they may not themselves be amenable to or even encouraged by. And that is a fundamental understanding that the leader has to develop in working with groups, especially diverse groups, in leading them towards some measure of success. Next, Bossidy suggests that leaders really need also to take a great deal of interest in the leadership development of others. Leadership expression and development is not a solitary or non-dependent relationship. There's an interdependency in leadership that is just as critical as any other interdependency in clinical practice. The leader recognizes that leadership is not an expression that will be undertaken out of context of the relationship with other leaders. Also, leaders recognize that self-development includes interest in development in a parallel way with other leaders that are experiencing the same leadership growth as the individual leader is, and also in identifying and developing new and emerging leaders. The experience that the individual leader is having in their own personal growth and development is the same kind of experiences that are going to be undertaken by new and emerging leaders. Recognizing that leadership is a journey and that we are all different stages or places on it helps inform the leader in terms of knowing specifically and clearly where a developing and emerging leader is in their own cycle of growth and maturation and what that individual needs in order to move to the next stage of development. This transition towards leadership, the succession of leaders in relationship to young and emerging leaders, is as important an obligation as the good exercise of individual leadership is to the current and active role of the leader. Most of us can recognize exemplars of leadership that inspire or encourage us in our own leadership development. We need also to recognize that we will serve that role for others. And so one of the reflections that the leader must always have is an acknowledgement that nothing can be done as a leader in isolation, and everything that is undertaken by the leader has an impact on others. There are no secrets, no hidden agendas, and nothing that doesn't ultimately get experienced and felt by those who are being led. The leader recognizes this and incorporates this understanding in all of their actions. As I've said many times, the leader is a role where the individual who occupies that role is never off. There are no accidental conversations or incidental moments. The leader is being watched and listened to very carefully by everyone. And it's very important for the leader to recognize that watching and observing and hearing and mentoring and modeling and presenting examples to others becomes very, very important as a fundamental role of a leader, even if you don't intend to do so, because people expect to see particular kinds of leadership characteristics exemplified in your role and want to make sure that there's congruence between how you identify yourself, how you behave, and the outcomes that you direct as a leader. Increasingly, peer processes, peer appraisals, peer review, peer development is important as a clinical and leadership activity. The one way that leaders can really evidence their involvement in other people's development is through their role in such peer processes. The more one is engaged in the conversation of development and of growth, maturation, and of corrective action, the more clearly and specifically the leader can demonstrate participation in the lives and developments of those he or she leads. Representing different kinds of characterizations, relationships, communication patterns that show commitment to development and growth certainly provides a major opportunity for the leader to demonstrate to others, to visualize for others, their commitment to individual growth and development and how they mentor and exemplify in their own leadership conversation and action appropriate behaviors upon which other leaders can depend for their own development. Another idea that Bossidy suggests, and I certainly concur, is that leaders really have to demonstrate that they are staying current. It is really important for leaders to be well informed, not only in their own field and in their own area of clinical expertise, but for the leader, it's important to know what's going on in the rest of the world. It's so disappointing and disheartening oftentimes in my own experience of leadership to be discussing issues of concern and development with leaders and find out that they really haven't got a clue what's going on in the broader landscape influencing and affecting what it is they do every day. Leaders have to recognize that most of what influences what we do is often outside of the field of vision of our own work and in the context which is influencing that work. It's reflective often of how people are reactive in their roles and in their leadership when they begin to realize an impact has occurred that has actually existed and been out in the context influencing the work and the role of the leader for some time, but because the leader has been so focused on the work, never saw it coming, never saw it arriving in the greater context, never saw the emergence of it within the context of the organization, the greater community or competitive environment of the organization, or in the greater context of the role of the leader. Failing to do this is a failure of leadership. Leaders simply have to be aware of what's going on elsewhere. Now, it's good to read widely in one's own field, even in one's own field in relationship to the leadership of your clinical practice. But it's even better to read more broadly in fields other than your own field, to read information about experiences and processes, practices, and innovations that are going on in a broader context, and determining whether some of that has implications for your own field or adaptation of some of those concepts and insights can work effectively in your own field. The most significant, meaningful, and valuable leadership experiences usually are an articulation of the translation and transition of leadership applications from other fields into your own field. The leader who is able to read broadly, draw from other fields in a broader frame of reference, to throw their leadership net widely, brings into the practice environment, into the clinical field of view, leadership capacities, skills, and insights that simply may not be available when looked at within one's own field or one's context for practice. So it's very important that the leader be not only willing, but demonstrate competence in translating the implications from the broader world of leadership, the world that influences the experience of those you lead, and to translate them in a language that those people whom you lead can understand and can apply to their own environment Secondly, it's important for the leader to be able to know what's going on in the lives of those that he or she leads. The ability to personalize and to integrate individual experiences with the experiences at work or the experience of change that the leader is going to be involved in helps provide an identification, a relationship with those that are led, and helps create a coalescing of personal experiences with the change and the work dynamics that are a part of making sure that the individual is competent and capable in dealing with the challenges and issues of work in a way that those persons can understand. Incorporating their personal experience and their own personal journeys into the work experience and the change journey helps make it real for them, and also helps them establish a framework of identity with you as a leader, and in that way helps them essentially feel as though they are supported, encouraged, and have a strength in you to help with insight, with development, with knowledge, with challenges, and with questions they might have in their own adaptation to the change or initiatives that you may be stimulating or encouraging that they participate in. Bossidy further suggests that not being connected to a broader frame of reference, to the broader world and the information that you get from there, helps actually impede your ability to anticipate and to identify the potential changes that will have an impact on your life and the work that you're doing, as well as your relationships with the workplace and the organization. Political, social, economic events often trigger influences and circumstances that will affect the role of the leader and will affect the exercise of leadership and affect the organization in terms of its success and its trajectory. So it's really important to recognize that these strategic events, they can be influenced by external occurrences, really have an impact on the effectiveness of the leader and the ability of the organization to adapt and to change quickly to those circumstances, which will in some way influence or even direct what will happen in the to the organization and in the organization over time. Bossidy even suggests that those that do not develop good anticipatory skills and are not prepared to see the broader field and to be able to translate it well really are not well positioned for good leadership and cannot exercise good leadership well. Indeed, may not themselves make good leaders. So it's important to begin to recognize that this is not an ancillary skill for leadership, but truly a fundamental talent that is an important construct of the leadership expression itself. It leads the leader to considering the fact that continuing development and growth and education and maturation and exposure help develop the skills of leadership. I certainly expect, as Bossidy suggests, that people need to perpetually seek development, education, renewal, and growth. And this is not necessarily simply going back to school. It also means exposure to new insights and people and opportunities, especially those that will serve as a stretch for the leader and will challenge the leader to become insightful with regard to new areas of leadership or new areas of development that simply haven't been a part of the consciousness of the leader as he or she begins to unfold his or her own development and application of leadership in their own role. Attitude is very important in the expression of this process. It is expected that of all of the people in an organization, the attitude of the leader is the one that represents the most positive, first positive, if you will, so that people recognize that attitude itself, as expressed by the leader, is really a fundamental part of the skill set of relationship, interaction, and of membership in a community. The leader best represents this openness to learning and development and mentoring and sharing and growing in an attitude that suggests that I'm committed to knowing and growing and developing and becoming, and that I am not a person who knows it all, has the answers, and has arrived at the place of knowledge that the rest of you simply have not yet obtained. This attitude of education and of learning and of growing and development and the forever aspect of that is really a critical element of representing to others the leader's openness to his own growth and development as a lifelong experience. Finally, Bossidy suggests that there are some things that the leader should expect of him or herself. Just as we have expectations of those we lead, we should be able to demonstrate to those we lead some self-expectations that we have with regard to our role, and translate that for them so that they can undertake the activities associated with really utilizing our skills as a leader and being able to depend on us with particular capacities that they can access in their relationship with us as a leader. He suggests that there are several things that are important to us as we provide our role as leaders in relationship to those we lead. First, he suggests that a clarity of direction is really critical for those that we lead. People really want specificity and clarity with regard to where they're going. Your translation of the future and the direction that we're traveling and what is necessary to move in that direction are really, really critical to their understanding and their willingness to commit. The staff really want to know what it is they have to do, how it is they have to do it, why they have to do it, so that they can be really clear about the meaning and value in the activities that they must undertake as a part of their own journey in the organization. Secondly, make sure that the goals and objectives that you've set have been set, number one, with them so that they are clear about what they are, and that they are clear and specific enough, and that everybody has a mutual common understanding of what these goals are. What is often surprising in an organization is how many times goals and objectives have been set, and then people are sent out to fulfill activities related to these goals and objectives, only to later find out that each of them had a different understanding of what the goals and objectives meant, how they were to be applied, how they were translated into their own work. It's really important that the leader make sure that people have a mutual understanding, a mutual clarity with the goals and objectives. It is often wise for the leader to ask at the end of a meeting how clear and mutual people have come to understand what it is expected of them following the meeting with regard to decisions that have been reached there. It is important for the leader to determine as specifically and clearly as possible in getting response from each member at the table. What is your understanding? How do you see your participation in this process? So that the leader can be clear that there is mutual understanding and agreement with regard to goals and objectives set and decided at the table. Next, it's really important to give frequent and specific and immediate feedback. Those who are led really need to know where they are in relationship to the direction set, the goals that are set, or their own work requirements. They expect and hope that the leader will communicate with them effectively and frequently, honestly and openly, so that they can know as clearly as possible where they are in relationship to the journey that they're on, and how that particular journey affects what they're doing and the success of their contribution to it. This clear, precise, timely, frequent interaction with individuals helps them feel connected, helps them feel supported and encouraged, and helps them feel ultimately valued and well-informed with regard to the expectations of performance and what it is they need to know in order to make sure that they're performing consistent with those expectations and advancing the interests of the organization as well as their own personal agenda as a part of the work team and as a part of a contributing member of the organization. Next, those who work for you really have a right to know that you are decisive and that you are timely with your decision-making. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that you are making all of the decisions and that you are driving decision-making, but it does mean that when you make a decision, it is clear, again, precise, it is something that people understand clearly and understand effectively and recognize that subsequent action can be built on that decision because they can depend that you're not going to be wishy-washy, change that decision a moment's notice, revisit the decision later, and readjust that decision continuously so that people are always off guard and uncertain. Being decisive, being timely, being crisp and focused and clear about the decision-making, acting on that decision in as just as decisive a way helps those who are led come to understand the value of that decision, the clarity of that decision, and the firmness that you bring your own commitment, your own energies, and your own leadership to implementing and undertaking that decision. Also, it's really important as a leader that you recognize the need to be accessible, to be available, to be approachable. Now, that doesn't mean that you're always there. Those notions that you are always present and leadership by walking around and leadership by visibility are really kind of pedantic and superficial kinds of notions of leadership. But still, the idea of availability and that your staff, those that you lead, your colleagues know that you are accessible, that you can be approached, that you can deal with any issue, that you are open and responsive to the needs of others is really important in terms of their reflection, their respect, and their need for you as a leader. It's also important for them to be able to visualize you as honest and frank, that you speak with candor and with openness and with clarity, and that you don't deliver double messages. You are not obtuse and duplicitous in your conversations, in your message delivery, or in your interaction with others. This honorable honesty and candor in all circumstances will pay off in the long run for many, many, many expressions of your leadership, regardless of the problems, concerns, and troubles that you might find the organization, individuals, or situations. This openness and this candor becomes really, really important in your relationship to others, and one upon which their respect of you can sincerely and substantially build. Now, clearly, we haven't covered all of the issues in relationship to leader, follower, and colleague relationships. But what we've tried to do is, using Bossidy kind of as a template, is recognize the critical elements of what you have a right to expect in those you lead, and just briefly, what they have a right to expect in you. This mutuality of expectation, of respect, of engagement and involvement with each other is really critical to the leadership experience, to the relationship of leadership, and to building your own personal effectiveness as a leader. Review of these skills and expectations periodically really can provide a frame for your own thinking with regard to the development of your own role, your own skill base, and the strengths and learning needs that you have in making yourself a competent leader and addressing the issues of leadership as you grow and mature in your own role. This is a lifetime journey. It's a work in progress. These are simply talents and skills that, through concentration and continuous attention, can grow and develop and help you mature as a capable and strong leader. Through focusing on these questions and issues and the examination of your own leadership role, you can make sure that you are addressing the skills necessary for good leadership and providing an opportunity for mentoring and growth and maturation in those that you lead and in their own development.